KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
And at 8 o'clock, we have mostly clear skies, 42 degrees in Atlantic, expecting to be mostly sunny here today with a high of 62. Good morning, I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News. In Western Iowa news, life is slowly returning to normal for many people who dealt with a summer of flooding along the Missouri River. Businesses that were evacuated are also reopening. Ann Thielen, a spokesperson for MidAmerican Energy, says they're moving back into their customer service office in Council Bluffs this weekend after spending nearly 5 months working out of a temporary office in the Mall of the Bluffs.
We have been able to serve our customers in this temporary location, but it feels good to be able to go back home where customers are used to finding us.
The MidAmerican facility, located at 3003 South 11th Street in Council Bluffs, was not badly damaged thanks in part to sand barriers.
We moved a lot of equipment and materials to higher ground, and in June and July we didn't have, you know, floodwaters reach the facility, but there were some heavy rains in August where floodwaters got very close. So minimal impacts to our facilities. We are pleased that we took all the steps to protect it, but if we hadn't, we would have likely seen some damage.
The MidAmerican office, temporary office of the Mall of Bluffs, closed at 5 p.m. yesterday, and the office on South 11th will reopen Monday at 8 a.m. The governors of Iowa and Nebraska have decided to pull out of the Missouri River Association of States and Tribes, or MORAST, effective immediately. The seven-state group also includes representatives from Wyoming, Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, Kansas, and Native American tribes. Iowa Governor Terry Branstad said Friday that flood control on the Missouri River was the main issue for him and his counterpart in Nebraska.
We didn't feel that this group, MORAST, had represented the interests of the constituents of our states. We just went through this disastrous flood, and MORAST has not been supportive of saying that flood control should be the top priority of managing the Missouri River.
Branstad said the governors along the river formed the Missouri River Working Group, which they feel will better represent them.
We've met a couple of times in Omaha, and I'm very appreciative of Governor Dave Heineman pulling that group of governors together, and we've come up with some suggestions on how things can be done differently, and we're hopeful in the future that we can convince the Corps of Engineers that they need to respect and recognize the impact of the decisions that they're making that they have had on our farmers and business people and homeowners.
Branstad said the downside to pulling out of the group is that they want to work with other states, but he says that was not happening.
Even before the flood of this year, the agencies in the state of Iowa have felt that our interests have not been represented by MORAST. So we actually had concerns about this, and I wrote a letter to a number of the other governors way back in April, even before the worst of the flooding started this year, suggesting that we were not satisfied and we didn't think it was the best use of our state tax money to contribute to this organization that hasn't represented the interests of the constituents in Iowa.
MORAST has an office in Lawrence, Kansas, and is led by former Kansas Governor Michael Hayden. Iowa has lifted the no-wake restriction for boaters on Lake Manawa near Council Bluffs because the water level has finally dropped after a summer of flooding along the Missouri River. The Department of Natural Resources lifted the no-wake rule on Friday. It's been in place since June 27th. Many of the docks had been submerged and had posed a danger to boats operating at higher speeds. Park manager Dan Jacobs says a dock will be placed on the west boat ramp that will stay through the winter. Docks on the north and south boat ramps will be removed next week. Elsewhere in the news, an assault complaint led to the arrest Wednesday of two people in Corning. The Adams County Sheriff's Office said 40-year-old Lucinda Nicholas and 33-year-old Matthew Corey, both of Corning, were each charged with domestic assault following an investigation into an incident which occurred Wednesday afternoon. Officials say Lucinda Nicholas called the Sheriff's Department to report she'd allegedly been assaulted by Matthew Corey. But upon further investigation, it was determined Corey had been assaulted as well, and both were being held in the Adams County Jail. Montgomery County Sheriff's Office reports a Red Oak man was arrested early this morning. 44-year-old Mark Ray Malley was taken into custody around 12:30 a.m. on a charge of public intoxication following an incident at 3rd and East Hammond Streets in Red Oak. Malley was being held in Montgomery County Jail on $300 bond. Three people were hurt during a collision Thursday afternoon northwest of Shenandoah in Fremont County. Sheriff's officials say the drivers of the vehicles, 16-year-old Judson Krein of Farragut and 21-year-old Michael Glenn of Riverton, suffered minor injuries. A passenger in the Glenn vehicle, 23-year-old Rebecca Hart of Sydney, was trapped in the vehicle and had to be extricated by emergency crews. She was transported to the Shenandoah Medical Center by Shenandoah Rescue. Sheriff's officials say the accident happened at around 4:15 p.m. Thursday as a car driven by Krein was traveling north on 300. 170th Avenue, and Glenn was traveling east on 190th. The vehicles collided at the intersection, and the impact resulted in Glenn's vehicle being shoved into the south ditch. That accident remains under investigation. Officials with West Central, a farmer-owned cooperative based in Ralston, Iowa, have announced they will once again offer $4,500 in scholarships to area students graduating high school in 2012 and planning to pursue an education in an agricultural field. The funds are available through West Central's Excellence in Agriculture Scholarship Program. Details about the program are available at area schools and extension offices. It's also available online. You can find a link to that website on our website at kjan.com. Click on the news tab and scroll on down for the scholarship story. Since 1996, West Central has awarded more than $50,000 to local students interested in pursuing an education and career in the agriculture industry. The candidates at Thursday night's forum in Atlantic discussed their interest in seeing the bike trails in and around Atlantic expanded, budget issues, term limits, their goals if elected, taxes, their qualifications, and what their strengths are. Among the Board of Supervisors candidates, Don Lappe said his biggest strength is his years in law enforcement and working with government agencies in that capacity. He said he understands what's transpired in local government in the past and what to expect in the future. Jeff Richter, who was a self-employed auctioneer for over 35 years before he retired, says his biggest strength is his business experience.
I kind of know what the businessmen are looking for and how to get the jobs in Cass County. That's going to be the biggest strength. The other one is going to be dealing with budgets. You know, if we have to deal with a budget to go through that line item by line item, and that might be what it comes down to necessary to see what we can cut, what we can keep, and where we're spending our money.
Gaylord Schelling, who retired after 33 years in a teaching career, said his strength lies in his abilities to communicate and in resolving conflicts.
And together then we can come up with whatever the problem is and try to solve it and hopefully make Cass County a place.
He also said he would be a good steward of tax dollars. Pat McCurdy said his biggest strength is in the area of economic development. He was one of the founders of Southwest Iowa Egg in the southeast part of Cass County, which he says created 20 jobs and added to the tax base. He also was involved in bringing Boulders Inn and Suites to Atlantic. McCurdy said he'd like to bring more wind farms to the county to increase the tax base. Kathy Summers, who currently serves on the city council, said her biggest strength is her ability to look at both sides of an issue and make an informed decision.
I know on the city council, when there's an issue that comes up, I've done my homework, I researched the issue, I approach the individuals that are involved, and I ask them privately, you know, what's the situation from your perspective and what can we do to solve it? And then I look for creative solutions to each of these problems and try to find ways to get every side to agree and to come to a solution that will work for both of them to the best, you know, possible way.
When asked whether or not the supervisor candidates in Cass County would be willing to take a cut in pay if that were an option to cut costs in a tight budget year, Schelling says he's not running for the job because of the pay. He said he wants a new challenge and to give back to the county and community to make it a great place to raise family. Richter, Lappe, and McCurdy said the pay is irrelevant and they too want to give back to the community and bring jobs to the area. Summers said the supervisor's pay is much less than the city council's and she would definitely take a cut in salary. She also said she cares about the community and hopes to add a more rounded, quote, balanced membership to the board, along with fresh ideas and a youthful exuberance. A man has been awarded $50,000 in winning his libel suit against the Democratic Party of Iowa. The Pottawatomie County jury ruled in favor of Randy Higginbotham on Wednesday. He'd sued the state party over a campaign pamphlet mailed during a 2008 Iowa House seat race between Democratic incumbent Paul Shamshore and Republican challenger Scott Belt. Higginbotham's attorney, Mark Rader, said the pamphlet mentioned that Belt in 1994 had bailed Higginbotham out of jail. The pamphlet said Higginbotham was a convicted sex offender. Rader said that Higginbotham had been charged but had never been convicted of any sexual-related offense. Party Executive Director Norm Sturzenbach said the party had relied on an independent firm for the research, which proved to be inaccurate about Higginbotham's court record. Iowa Congressman Tom Latham will take part in the November 30th hearing focusing on this summer's historic flooding along the Missouri River. The hearing was announced on Thursday by the newly formed U.S. House Missouri River Flood Working Group, of which Congressman Latham is a member. Latham said he'll voice the concerns of Iowans who live and work along the Missouri River at the hearing. He said any new river management policies enacted in the wake of this summer's disaster must focus on flood prevention and in lower basin communities. A working group aims to make flood control a greater priority in the Missouri River Management. After concerns arose in recent months regarding river management practices by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. The Corps is currently conducting public meetings for its 2012 annual operating plan of the Missouri River System. The November 30th hearing will be a chance for House members to voice questions and concerns about the 2012 operating plan. And Iowa Congressman Steve King will serve as a moderator of a debate between Republican presidential candidates Herman Cain and Newt Gingrich tonight in Houston, Texas. The event organizers have said the gossip about allegations that Cain sexually harassed former employees in the late 1990s will not be discussed, and King doesn't expect the topic to come up at all.
Only if Speaker Gingrich brings it up. I don't think Herman Cain will, and I don't intend to. My view is they're innocent until proven guilty. We don't even have the name of anyone who alleges this at this point.
King says the whole issue should be off limits until responsible media produce an Anita Hill, which is a reference to the woman who came forward during U.S. Senate confirmation hearings to say that Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas had sexually harassed her.
It may well be that these allegations, even if true, are so devoid of substance that the voters would decide they like Herman Cain a lot more.
Cain and Gingrich have agreed to focus the debate on entitlement reform beyond Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Steve King is prepared to press the candidates to reveal their plans for dealing with the federal budget deficit and the interest on the federal debt.
I want to see if we can get the presidential candidates, in this case Herman Cain and Newt Gingrich, to address the components of the entitlements and what they would do to slow the growth in Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, in such a way that we can get ourselves to a balanced budget again.
The event is billed as a Lincoln-Douglas-style debate, it'll be 90 minutes long rather than 2 hours, and it's set to begin tonight at 8 o'clock and will be broadcast nationally on C-SPAN. And jurors will have all weekend to think about whether a woman who killed an Iowa man in 2001 is a scheming murderer or a heroic mom who saved her kids. Jurors deciding Tracy Richter's fate deliberated for more than 3 hours Friday before telling Judge Kurt Wilkie they wanted to go home for the weekend. Wilkie said they should return Monday morning and warned them not to discuss the case over the weekend because he didn't want to miss trial. Prosecutors say Richter killed 20-year-old Dustin Weedy in December of 2001 as part of an elaborate plot to frame her ex-husband so she could gain an advantage in a custody dispute. But Richter said she killed Weedy at her Erling home to protect herself and her children after he and another man invaded her house. Taking a look at national news headlines this morning, he retired just a month ago, and now CBS says former 60 Minutes humorist Andy Rooney has died at the age of 92. Rooney spent more than 30 years wryly talking about the oddities of life for 60 Minutes. He would rail about how unpleasant air travel had become, questions why banks have important sounding names, or just talk about the old clothes in his closet. Andy Rooney, dead at 92. Officials in the nation's capital say a car drove through a crowd near an Occupy D.C. protest and struck three people, but no charges will be filed against the driver. Oakland authorities will investigate the injury to another veteran who was arrested. Hundreds of marchers took to the streets in Sydney, Australia today under heavy police presence. And the effect of Bank Transfer Day today remains to be seen, but it has close to 80,000 supporters on its Facebook page, urging bank customers to close their accounts in favor of credit unions by today. The movement has already helped beat back Bank of America's plan to start charging a $5 debit card fee. Supporters say it's more than about just the fees. Taking a look at our funeral announcements this morning here on KJAN, Earl Kirchhoff, age 82 of Templeton, died Tuesday at the Manning Regional Health Care Center. A massive Christian burial service for Earl Kirchhoff will be today at 10:30 at the Sacred Heart Church in Templeton. Odie Funeral Home in Manning has the arrangements. Carolyn Ullman, age 80 of Adair, died Tuesday at her home. Funeral services for Carolyn Ullman will be today at 10:30 at the Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Adair. Hockenberry Family Care Funeral Home of Adair has arrangements. Dale Fazell, age 84, of Bridgewater, died October 28th at Mercy Medical Center in Des Moines. Celebration of life services for Dale Fazell will be today at 11 o'clock at the Steen Funeral Home in Messina. 76-year-old Ruby Ann Crawley of Audubon died October 29th at the Audubon County Memorial Hospital. Funeral services for Ruby Crawley will be held today at 2 o'clock at the Kessler Funeral Home in Exira. 71-year-old Sandra Wilkinson of Panora died Sunday at Iowa Methodist Medical Center in Des Moines. Funeral services for Sandra Wilkinson will be held today at 3 o'clock at the Twig Funeral Home in Panora. Kenneth Beener Inken, age 79, of Atlantic, died Tuesday at the Cass County Hospice Center. Services for Kenneth Inken will be held Monday at 10:30 at Zion Lutheran Church in Atlantic. Roland Funeral Home in Atlantic has arrangements. 92-year-old Norma Helmrich of Manchester, Iowa, died Thursday at her home. Funeral services for Norma Helmrich will be held Monday at 11 o'clock at the Manchester United Methodist Church. The Bonenkamp Murdoch Funeral Home in Manchester has the arrangements. Gail Schwarty, age 62, of Erling, died Thursday. A massive Christian burial service for Gail Schwarty will be held Tuesday at 10:30 at St. Joseph Catholic Church in Erling. Burmeister Johansson Funeral Home in Harlan has arrangements. 94-year-old Dorothy Lucille Liddell of Harlan died Wednesday at the Elmcrest Retirement Home in Harlan. Services for Dorothy Liddell will be held on November the 11th at 11 a.m. at the Pauli Jones Funeral Home in Harlan. And 69-year-old Deloy Cannon of Greenfield died Friday at her daughter's home in Guthrie Center. Services for Deloy Cannon are pending at the Steen Funeral Home in Greenfield. And that's a check of the news on KJAN. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.